Something just happened that changed a lot of lives of marketers. Let's talk about some of the profound impacts of the uprising with my friend, Daniel Nessel. Greetings, my friends. This is a special episode. It's a bonus episode of the Marketing Companion. We're a little bit squeezing something in here into our regular schedule because something profound happened last week. And I wanted to pass along. I felt compelled that this is something we needed to talk about with you. As some of you may know, I host a retreat every year. Actually, this year I'm doing it twice a year, called The Uprising. This is a place where we bring 30 people together. I limit it to 30 because I want it to be small. I want to enable these important relationships and connections. And 30 has been an outstanding number. We come together at a lodge in the forest near Knoxville, Tennessee, and we try to help each other learn about what it's going to take to be relevant going forward, what it takes to be resilient. It's giving us the ideas, the knowledge, the inspiration, and the relationships to move forward in a more relevant and resilient way. Now, the problem that I have talking to you about this today is I was so immersed. I was sort of facilitating so many of these discussions. I spent a lot of the time up in front of the group helping to facilitate, and I didn't take a lot of notes. But I'm so happy to have Daniel Nessel with us today. I know many of you are familiar with Daniel, especially from his podcast, the newly relaunched podcast. Dan, talk a little bit about that, where people can find you, and talk about your show.
Well, thanks. And thanks, Mark, for having me on today. And it's just such an honor and a pleasure to come out here and talk about something that is near and dear to my heart, you know, the uprising. It's become a part of me over the last couple of years, but we'll get to that. And thanks for the soapbox here to talk about my little show. It's The Trending Communicator, and just relaunched. And I will say that I relaunched it based on a lot of the learnings that I've had from the uprising over the last couple of years, really helped me figure out what that direction should be. I think I'm on the right one. Well, time will tell. But it's been fantastic. And, you know, I really am grateful for my time at the Uprising and On Rise and everything related to that whole community.
Yeah. So, and we have the advantage that Daniel's been to, this was your third one, I think, right?
Third one, right.
Third one, yeah. So, I mean, he has a good sense of the culture and what we do there. And it's inevitable that you've got to talk a little bit about the sharing and the community, because the structure of the uprising and what we're going to do today is literally go through the agenda and talk about a few key ideas from each of the presenters. Many of them are really globally acclaimed in terms of what they've done and what they're known for. But the structure of this is also important, that this is not just people talking at you. It's not just lectures. Is that every discussion point evolves into a conversation. And that's where some of the most powerful points come out. Those are some of the biggest light bulbs where people with all this experience connect the dots through these conversations. And you go, oh, wow, I really hadn't thought about it that way. So everybody has an opportunity to participate and contribute in their own way. So what we're going to do is go through the 8 sessions. And ironically, the very first session was on AI. Daniel and I worked together on this. This is the first time we've ever done a presentation together.
Yep.
It was so much fun. We got such a great response. I really hope we get to do this again soon. The title of our talk was Personal Relevance in the AI Era. To kind of stick to the podcast format, we're going to have to go quickly through some of these things.
Sure.
But So the first session, we just hit on a few of the things I would say really to kind of calm people down and put the everything that's going on in AI in a way that tethers it to business reality.
Right.
So here are some of the main points that we made. Number one, I talked about how the rate of change is going to be more disruptive than the amount of change, right? Because we as human beings are not built for change. Another idea is that, you know, in the early days of the internet, we were told, oh, you've got to learn how to code if you're going to be relevant. We're hearing a lot of that with AI as well. And as we're being encouraged to learn how to do prompts, we got to be prompt engineers. And by the way, I encourage everyone to get into ChatGPT or get into, you know, I'm really loving Claude 3 these days.
Yeah, me too.
And go in and play around, learn to do some prompts. But the second point is that AI is going to come to you. And AI is going to be, innovation in the future is going to be applying a layer of AI to all we do. It's already showing up in the Microsoft products, in the Google products. It's showing up everywhere. And then we got Daniel involved talking about this third point. Relevance is about choosing the right waves to ride. So I encourage people to think about what is the core competency of your business and thinking about not being distracted by all the magic tricks, but look at what is happening in AI that aligns with your competency. Now, you had some really good advice in this area.
Yeah, and it was really, even you've mentioned a bit of it so far, which is get involved, like do it. Do like work with AI tools whenever you can, whenever you have a chance. Start with ChatGPT. It doesn't matter, any of those big models. And I love Claude as well. You know, we've talked about that before. The idea is like just to stay relevant, you need to be in it. And you need to be in it and gather information as much as you can and get across your industry. Like, it's not an easy task, but keep your mind fed, keep your hands dirty. And that is really, there's really no secret to the secret, right? And then you'll be able to figure out what's relevant. You'll be able to figure out how to employ these tools or these platforms or whatever you want to call them in your day-to-day and improve your work and improve your life in some ways.
Now, the next point, I think you brought up some of the most important things because, and this was really, I think, the most powerful part of the presentation. You work for a company called Lixil. It's a global multi-billion dollar company, and you are actually doing this stuff. You are training people. You are implementing. So we encourage people to get your hands dirty. Start doing this because most businesses aren't acting. Yeah. So talk about a few of your key points from this part of the presentation as you encouraged people to get involved.
The main thing that we're doing at Lixil is democratizing AI in some ways, right? Companies and you know, enterprises have a lot of different ways to look at AI. Some of them are like doing this top-down approach where you come up with something for your sales program and for your customer service and you implement and everybody just has to deal with it. But then there's those companies like Lixil that are empowering employees with the tools they need to understand, you know, AI. And a lot of that is in a protected environment, right? Using the OpenAI APIs and so on to just make sure that everybody has, you know, the capability to use GPT-4 and so on to really innovate and try new things. You know, we have a very big experiment and learn culture and mentality. So, I mean, I really admire our CEO, Kinya Seto, who really just took this by the horns, said, look, this is your power suit.
That's awesome.
That was the metaphor he used. I mean, and it's funny because I call it my little intern, very different than a power suit, but same concept. And so I just encourage people to learn how to prompt, to run pilots if they can, like how they can do that. But before that, before you do anything, understand your policy, understand the compliance, legal, the whole environment so that you're not crossing boundaries that you shouldn't be crossing. And, you know, I wouldn't encourage anybody to behave outside the realm of of what their company allows, you know. So you want to make sure that you're in that, in that. So at the same time, in your own time, on your own PC or on your own phone, play as much as you can.
And that leads sort of to the next idea, the next presentation. And again, when I say presentation, it really is beginning a discussion. So these were all conversations with key ideas, but certainly there's got to be a reckoning between legal and marketing and tech around AI, or people are going to fall behind. And there's got to be some new understandings going forward. And that kind of led in to the next discussion. It was really kind of cool. I didn't necessarily plan it this way, but it certainly worked that the discussions evolved and sort of like built off of each other throughout the 2 days. And next we had a great friend.
You know
friend
what surprised me? Oh, I'm sorry, Mark.
Go ahead, go ahead.
One thing, what really surprised me in a very pleasant way about that whole, our whole AI discussion is that it was, number one, overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah.
And, you know, we really wanted to give people this message of hope in some ways that, you know, hey, look, this is the situation and you're in a unique position to take advantage of it. You know, but also the attendees weren't like, how do I prompt? Or, you know, we weren't asking for very specifics about tools and so on. It was really a very, you know, strategic and and important discussion. And I thought that was very characteristic.
That's where we, that's where we needed to be. Because again, I mean, we're talking about relevance, you know, learning how to do a specific prompt, you know, might help you tomorrow, but we're talking about protecting our careers. Right. So, Evelyn Starr led the next discussion. It was about, and I challenged her to really think about the future of branding. What a dynamic area. I mean, as I think about what a brand meant when I was a young guy, a brand was like, well, this is what we say it is. Mm-hmm. And you listen to the ads and that's kind of what you believed. And oh my gosh, branding is such a dynamic area. And one of the key points that Evelyn brought up is the number one question marketers are going to have to deal with going forward is this real? We don't know what to believe. You know, we're not going to know, even if it's someone that we trust, you know, talking on a YouTube video, is it really that person? We're not going to know. So I think she did a great job framing that this idea of somehow being a hub for authenticity is just going to be huge.
Yeah, she was, as always, Evelyn's really dynamic. And, and every time she presents, I'm just, you know, it's hard to take notes because I'm just watching her so intently.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, the interesting thing was we came off of an AI discussion and now we're in a discussion where we got AI out of the way, like right away, and worked into more human concepts of trust, you know, consistency, transparency, you know, the concept of defending your space, protecting your brand, and then those human connections that actually make that authenticity possible. And that, it was almost magical because people were, I think you could see the relief, like, okay, we're not going to be talking about AI all the time. So
it was good, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I really enjoyed that.
I also loved that Evelyn focused on the human connection through community, live experiences, one-on-ones. And of course, you know, I just wrote this book on community. So, Evelyn. but you know, earlier you mentioned the Rise community, and you know, I haven't really talked about it on the podcast, but I invite anybody who's interested to join. All you got to do literally is send me an email and tell me you want to join. And the unexpected benefit of Rise to me is how we help each other be relevant. And that's one of the things that Evelyn talked about in terms of discerning truth, that the community has become a place to tell the true story about the brand, or where people can come to get the real answer about a question that might be causing a problem.
Yeah.
So that was a great session.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. The next one I kind of struggled with this, and this was on me, And it was about the personal brand journey. And the reason I struggled with this is that every year before the uprising, I put out a survey. I said, okay, what does everybody want to talk about? So I've got basically my marching orders. Here are the things that everybody wants to talk about. These are the most important items. And there were some very, very clear messages. And one of them was about the personal brand. And how I struggled here was, all right, how do you do this in an hour or so? And so I'd like to hear your ideas about, how this worked for you. But what I decided to do was bring in two people that were attending the uprising, who one, Valentina Escobar Gonzalez, she was about 2 years along in her personal branding journey. Aaron Hassan was about 1 year along in their personal branding journey. They've both been through the personal branding class. Daniel has been through it too. Mm-hmm. And what I decided to focus on was the two areas where people struggle most. Number one, defining what you want to be known for, where you fit in the ecosystem. And number two, how do you create content consistently to tell your story? So how did this session land on you? How did we do?
It was, well, first of all, it was fantastic, of course, because Aaron, and you can't find two more authentic people than Aaron Hassan and Valentina.
Two more with Escobar. Bigger hearts to share.
With bigger hearts and bigger sharing. Yeah. And you know what? These are people who are on the journey. They're not coming to us saying, I did it, and here's how I was successful. Now listen to me. They were saying to us, here's how I'm doing things. And they're open to conversation about it, and pointing out to their own, their own kind of pivots and turns. And that's what I really enjoyed about that session the most is how I could just reflect on where I'm at and making different pivots and different turns. And I see Aaron, who has gone from, who has incredibly accelerated his, mm-hmm. his business and
business,
his life.
Yeah. And his presence, yeah.
Simply by just honing in on the fact that, you know what? I'm really good at talking with founders. I get this. I get tech founders. I'm good with these people. And he's just done the work, creating content consistently and regularly. And it was exciting. I wrote down one thing he said, which was he feels like he's speaking to himself 10 years ago.
Yeah, that and was wonderful, wasn't it?
That was
it?
Such a wonderful point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But what a great mindset too, to help people. Yeah, that would be a great blog post to write. I'll consider that as an idea for my own blog. And then the other thing that I thought was really energizing to me is both of them talked about how their lives had been changed, because we talked about how do you know it's working? That's a big deal, because you put a lot of time into this. There's no shortcut to do this. It takes commitment. It takes consistency. So
Valentina,
Valentina's
just understanding how it works. I mean, Valentina's story about being at the Home Depot during, the pandemic and covered in a mask and she put on her costume, her COVID mask and her hat and her sunglasses.
Yeah.
Like she looked like she was somebody in hiding, but yet she was recognized. Despite all of that,
because of her voice, So that was great. What a great idea that how do you know it's working? That people can even recognize you by your voice. And that's one of the things they teach, is you've got to look at these qualitative measures that you're being recognized. Are you being invited to be on a podcast? Are you being invited to contribute to a blog? Are people saying, "Oh, I saw this thing you posted. I've got a question." Those are all qualitative measures that show it's working. It may not be money, but it's leading to money. So keep on going.
Yep.
Now, each year I bring in a couple, just kind of legendary people. I bring in someone with specific knowledge and experience. And the first one was Sandy Carter. Sandy literally is a legend in marketing. She was a senior marketing leader at IBM. That's where I got to know her. She was at AWS, as a marketing leader, and now she's working with Unstoppable Domains as the chief operating officer. And I guess just on a personal note, you know, I've known and admired Sandy, but during the uprising, I like fell in love with her because she is just the nicest, most generous person. You know, I thought, oh, Sandy Carter, she's going to be going back to her room saying, I've got this important call to take with some, you know, titan of industry.
Yeah.
She was totally present, totally immersed, spent any time with anybody, even talking about like parenting issues, whatever was on their mind. So she was a superstar. And where we decided to focus, we spent 90 minutes kicking off a discussion based on her experiences at Davos. She just went to the Davos Economic Forum. How lucky were we to be able to, you know, tap into her experiences there? So we had a fireside chat. And again, everything was like building on each other, because the first thing she talked about, like built on what Evelyn said, was about trust is our currency. She talked about the leadership impacts of AI. And I hope you have some ideas about this one, which is absolutely fascinating. Convergence of technology.
Yeah.
And how the more technology we have, it's making the technology move faster and making more interesting. And we talked about a couple other issues. But tell me, so what were some of your big takeaways from Sandy?
From Sandy? Again, she's talking about megatrends.
Yeah.
And you know, once you get over the fact that she was discussing these things next to, you know, Ambassador such and such and President so and so.
Yeah. And here she is with us.
Here she is with us. And you know, just a sidebar, we mentioned earlier on, before we've talked about this before, it's the culture of the uprising is where, you know, people just check their egos at the door. I don't even know if she had an ego to check. She's that kind of a person. She just seemed so open. And I'm going to just reiterate this, just echo what you said. She was just delightful to hang out with.
Yeah.
And she brought some serious thunder in her discussion here.
Mm.
And, you know, the main standouts for me, of course, she talked about AI. That's her area as well. But this convergence of technology where robotics and AI are kind of moving together. The pizza delivery robot was what she was talking about, I think, but really the bigger picture of, you know, what the societal implications of the exponential change that's going to be brought about by this combination of robotics, AI, blockchain, spatial/metaverse, and quantum. And quantum is one of those things that I really haven't had any exposure to.
That's kind of the next one.
Yeah, apart from like some sci-fi stuff. But what really got me and got to a lot of us actually, I think, out of her conversation was this whole thing about the data imperative and how data is going to become more and more of a currency. Talking about identifying, you know, it was almost like we were in this, we talked about big data years and years and years ago, right? And it's almost like, let's trash that whole concept because big isn't big enough. We are in this data hungry world. And that led to discussions within the uprising attendees across all of us saying, well, is data going to become this currency that we're going to be able to sell? And is that going to be the answer to universal basic income? This is the way these conversations happen at the uprising.
Yeah.
Which is
right.
It's just one of those
everybody
examples.
Builds on everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. And she really kicked off that conversation and just, you know, and then when she wrapped up with the impact on teams, and how you get, you know, how you can move forward with this whole thing. It wasn't like she had answers. She's saying these are the trends.
Mm-hmm.
And it led to a lot of really important discussions, I think, later.
Yeah. And again, overall, the tone, I mean, these are very, very serious ideas, but the tone was generally positive and optimistic, and it led to really, powerful insights in the discussions.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the
day one,
kind of the end of day one, and then we had a lot of fun We had optional, you could go out and take a hike. You could go out and do yoga. You could just, sit out in the, in the gardens and read. And we also had an optional session with our friend, Richard Bliss. Richard Bliss is a LinkedIn expert. And so he provided time to, he just was so generous in giving his time during the relaxation period to teach people tricks on LinkedIn as an optional activity. That was the first time we did something like that. And that was a big hit.
I was in that session that first day. And Richard, as always, delivers. And, a lot of the uprising are just talking about these very important topics. But when we have those LinkedIn sessions, it's scribble furiously in your notepad because you got to go and do what he says like immediately. Very, very strategic and tactical. Because every time Richard talks to us, I feel like, damn, I'm doing it wrong. Because he's so good. So I think those are really effective sessions. And it's already changed the way I'm doing LinkedIn activity.
The next session was a good sort of blend of strategy and tactics as well. The next morning, but that evening we also had a kind of a fun presentation. I always like to, add little surprises, do unexpected things just to delight people who are attending. And of course we have lots of, great food and entertainment. And, Keith Jennings was there and, Keith, of course, is a regular on this podcast. He's one of my co-hosts. He's just such a beloved guy with such deep insights. And so Keith and I talked about what he could do at the uprising, because every year in the feedback, people say, you got to have Keith there. He's such a great guy. So he talked about the difference between success and significance. And that was really a lovely talk. The next morning, I brought in Ed Keller, and I worked hard to bring Ed in. It's very, very difficult to get on his schedule, and he's not a person you might have heard of before, but he is one of my personal marketing heroes. He is I consider him the father of modern word of mouth marketing, and I think word of mouth marketing is one of the most important things we need to be thinking about right now, as many areas of traditional marketing, traditional advertising, traditional content and SEO are kind of like going away. But we always have word of mouth, either online or in real life. And so Ed, his 20 years of research are more relevant and significant than ever. So what were some of your big takeaways from Ed?
At the highest level, I was just rapt watching Ed and kind of thinking through what he was saying. But at the highest level, first of all, it was a very human discussion. Day one had a lot of AI. Mm-hmm. Day two, once we started with Ed, we were on this track, which really, I watch. It took 1 hour and 45 minutes before AI was mentioned for the very first time on day two.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ed, and that's because Ed's presentation was just tremendous. The idea that word of mouth marketing does not happen online, and, we've been so focused on this whole digital world, shows that we're missing 80 to 90% of our audience. And if we don't focus, if we don't pay attention to this, mm-hmm. and we don't pay attention to this at our own risk. So this is not the group of people you're going to reach by clever social ads or through influencers. And in fact, that was one of the big takeaways, was that all this attention to influencers online is really not very effective. Right now, there is a good complement between the online online word of mouth, I suppose, or sharing of comments and such to offline. But still, that whole offline piece of 80 to 90% is just something we miss out on peril.
Yeah, that's where the conversations are. That's where the influence is. And one of the big ideas that came out of that, and it's something I had known before but really kind of forgot about, was that there is no correlation between sentiment analysis online and what's really happening in the offline world. I mean, that is like mind-numbing that we depend so much on social listening platforms, on sentiment analysis, that a small group of people, loud people, can hijack a conversation, can destroy a brand. But that is not necessarily what is happening in the real world. In fact, what Ed said, it's almost never what's really happening. A very small percentage of the entire population are creating that antagonistic content online. So he said, if you're only looking at what's happening online, if you're only measuring what's happening online, you're driving your kayak with just one paddle. You've got to have both paddles to get a full picture of the world.
That's right. Yeah, it left a lot of impressions with people. And the last thing I think I just wanted to say about Ed is that the amount of people or the amount of word of mouth marketing or the kind of ratio between word of mouth and online has never changed. We've been this for like two decades, 2.5 mm-hmm. decades. Mm-hmm. And there's been almost no statistical change in the numbers, really, the market's grown. People, there's growth, but it's proportional. So it's something that it's amazing that it falls under people's radar. And I was so glad to hear the presentation and see the presentation, because just I have loads of notes and I have to go back to my leadership with it. So he had an effect on me for sure.
Yeah. I featured word of mouth marketing pretty heavily in the Marketing Rebellion book. I'm working on a new book for 2025. I'm going to hit word of mouth marketing again, because we are in an era where trust is at a premium. People do not trust our legacy institutions, government, media, even like universities, even religious leaders. But we trust each other. We trust our friends. We trust our family. We trust our neighbors. And if they're recommending ideas and products, that's where we're going to go.
It's kind of funny how it always comes back to this kind of community and trusted sense makers that we talk about, right? That's it's a red thread that runs through everything.
Yeah. The next session, and this sort of surprised me, that one of the highest areas of interest for the attendees was the future of content and social media. I kind of thought, well, maybe that's, old fashioned these days, but that was right near the top. And this was just a delightful opportunity, because we featured two people who had never been to the uprising before, Lee Judge and Nachi Lazarus, both great experts, great professionals. And so let me just turn it over to you for, maybe a few notes that you took from the future of content and social media.
I'll try to just kind of give you the one takeaway from each of these great speakers. And so Lee, I've been following Lee for a long time. He's a content machine, but not in this kind of mass approach way. He's very focused in what he does and what he talks about. And he's just been a tremendous podcaster, a maker of video, of multimedia. And anyway, I've been his fan, and to hear him talk about, kind of almost like simplifying the process a bit for us. Mm-hmm. I got this idea that you just don't have to overthink it too much. And when you look at the traditional kind of, he used the traditional marketing funnel, and we even made fun of it a little bit. He was a little self-deprecating about the whole thing, but, focus your quality efforts where quality counts, and mm-hmm. focus, and otherwise, and it sounds like just such like common sense, but too many companies, too many people, too many solo operators are spending too much time on this kind of awareness content that mm-hmm. has very, very little effect further down the customer journey. So if you have a limited amount of time and effort, focus most of it further along the path where people need to have quality, high quality, high value content mm-hmm. in order to influence their decisions. And mm-hmm. and you know, it's he called it polish, right? Low polish to high polish. So
yeah.
You know, it was fun to hear him talk about
it. He also had some really great observations about the we're in this bubble. You know, he said, we don't go to the content. The content comes to us, right? We think we're going to the content, but we're being surrounded with content based on our social graph, our tastes, our likes, even, you know, our friends, what we do, where we go. That's mm-hmm. all in the algorithm. And so, you know, he talked about the dangers of that. He talked about, you know, are you really learning about the world, or are you looking in a mirror every day?
Yeah.
And that was a very profound statement.
Yeah, I thought so too. And Nachi, who was, I mean, what a surprise. I wasn't surprised that he gave a good presentation or that he knew what he's talking about. Mm. He's a very soft-spoken gentleman. He gets in front of the room, and he is this, like, what's
powder
the word?
Keg. He's just keg. Ignited.
He's ebullient. He's just, we started to call it the duality of Nachi. He is that that kind of a person.
Yeah.
And not
dynamic.
Like a split personality, just so dynamic.
Yeah.
But he talked about three major trends in social media, which was the move towards subscription and paid models, this whole idea of spatial computing and personalized social, and then the social media ads and AI-driven social as this kind of third trend, where, you know, AI is running ads on Facebook, et cetera, and they're taking the power of advertising away from the advertiser and saying, no, we'll do it ourselves. You know, you just click this button and we'll run ads for you. And, you know, but it mixed in with everything else. It was a pretty good, I think, overview of the landscape right now. And it got people to thinking about, you know, this whole, I think the subscription paid model situation was probably generated, you know, the most immediate reaction, because a lot of.
And the trend is that there's more content going toward subscriptions.
Right. And some of the platforms, some big platforms are saying, well, would you, you know, we're going to create premium services that you're not exposed to ads. We're going to create premium services for this. And that works in some cases, but, you know, I came out with the opinion that I don't think it would work for like platforms like Facebook, or, you know, I'm not willing to pay for Facebook no matter what they do.
Yeah.
Right. But YouTube or streamers, that's where it makes sense, because you don't want to be interrupted by commercials when you're watching videos, for example. So it was a really interesting conversation.
It was great. And, you know, I think Nachi took me to a new place around metaverse/spatial. Mm-hmm. And he talked about his experience trying on the, is it Vision Pro, the Apple
Pro? Yeah, the Vision Pro.
Yeah. So, you know, and he just said, look, I mean, this takes you to a new universe. Yeah. This helps you, you know, explore the world in a whole new way. This is going to change social media forever. And then he tied that in to the impact of AI, and he gave some very tactical examples of how AI is taking over tasks that marketers have been kind of proud to do. Mm-hmm. That it, like, maybe took our insight and our research to do, you know, just the right ad campaign. And he sort of ended, you know, with like, well, what are CMOs going to do if AI can do all of this? And that led to some incredible discussions.
I just want to point out the whole idea of the experience of Vision Pro and how that's changed. He called it the screen to scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. You know,
screen like, to seam.
Screen to scene. So we're moving from the screen to a whole scene. And it's a good description of the experience that we're all slowly but surely going to be under going under.
You know, I don't know if it's going to be slow but sure. You know, one of the things that, you know, Sandy talked about is how all these technologies as they converge, one of the impacts is they kind of accelerate each other.
Yeah.
And a perfect example is this humanoid robotics and AI. The thing that had been lacking with the humanoid robotics is the ability to sense and react. And now you've got that with AI, and boom,
Yeah.
I think 2024 is, or maybe 2025 is going to be the year of humanoid robotics.
We shall
So then
see.
we moved into community, and what an energizing discussion this was with two amazing people. Alice Ferris is one of the founders of a company called Ghost Goal, almost at Ghostbusters. It's called Goal Busters.
Goalbusters.
So she helps nonprofits meet the or exceed their fundraising goals. And Jason Blanchard is a marketing executive with a company of hackers. These are people that are they're cybersecurity experts,
Ethical hackers, Mark. Ethical
ethical
hackers.
hackers. Yeah, they try to break into your company to protect your company. So two exceedingly interesting and accomplished professionals. We talked about the importance of community as a brand strategy. And both of them had some very interesting insights around how they are actively and practically applying community to their businesses and also to their personal lives. I mean, one of the stories I love from Alice is she talked about a brand called MM LaFleur. And she said, I'm almost embarrassed to say this, but this is where I go for support from women on professional issues. Now, if you're not familiar with this brand, this is a retail brand that sells clothing to professional women. And she used this as an example. She used this example as an illustration to show how there has to be an intersection of purpose to make a brand community work. So is it in the customer's best interest to be successful at work and have a place to talk about it? Yes. Is it in the best interest of the brand to have their customers be successful so they'll buy more clothes? Yes. And in that intersection, they have created a dynamic community. It's almost like a little, LinkedIn for professional women. Jason runs a community, has a team, and his community has 40,000 people in it. One of the interesting things he talked about, he almost created this vision of a CRM for community called the Trust Ladder.
The trust ladder.
The trust ladder. So he's looking at to activate a community, you need to relate to people in a different way. So people who are just coming in, they have a certain level of trust, and you connect with them, and they need a certain level of content. And then so he had four different levels, basically. This was a very important idea for me. Because in our community, Dan is a great leader in the Rise community. We're getting a lot of new people in, but they're not necessarily stepping up into activating and maybe taking over leadership positions. So I need to consider how we do a better job connecting to new people and moving them up the trust ladder.
Jason had a lot of great ideas about that, and I liked to me it's sort of overlaid with Lee's presentation in some ways about creating
Oh,
the right
right.
kind of content at each level.
Yeah, perfect.
And it was just good. It was good to connect those two together and, moving people from, what is it? I got strangers, spectators, advocates, allies, and ultimately to friends.
Yeah.
And, it's another kind of, funnel model, if you want to call it that, but it didn't, the way that Jason presented it, it's really about the steps that people take at each level themselves that get them to where they need to be in the community. And they don't, they're not in the community until they get to the, I guess, like advocates point. That's when they're invited into the community.
Yeah,
But it's fantastic. And
I just wanted to give him a shout out as He's working on so many different creative ideas around developing a crowd-funded, crowd-sourced comic book to help communicate about his
Yeah.
company. He's created a card game to help people to teach people about cybersecurity. So it was really great getting to know Jason and being inspired by some of his work. The last presentation, it was what an amazing opportunity we had. So Robert Christensen actually was a customer of mine, is a customer of mine. Robert has spent many, many years as an entrepreneur, has been incredibly successful. His last company was bought by Hewlett-Packard Enterprises, and they retained him. They kept him in the company as a senior vice president of innovation. And so as I got to know him, he started telling me about some of his ideas. His passion is about building resilient leaders. I thought, oh my gosh, that's exactly what we need to hear. So how cool is this? I mean, Robert, like everybody, he's a participant in the event. So that's a big way that this retreat is different. I mean, there's not speakers speaking at you. Your fellow participants are getting up and leading discussions. So, he introduced this profound idea that a limiting factor for many leaders that leads to self-destructive behaviors is not limitations in their abilities, but actually experiencing success that's out of their comfort zone. And once he started pointing to examples in entertainment, where all of a sudden someone's famous, or in sports or in music, it's like, oh, I know people like that. And then
That would sit, yeah.
he walked us through a process to sort of reflect on how that might be impacting us.
Yeah, it happens to all of us who make any progress at any time in your life. You get to this point where you get to a certain level, and then you feel like you've achieved what you deserve, and then everything beyond that is euphoric until it isn't. And then it starts. That's where the idea of imposter syndrome and self sabotage, and that he called it the land of self doubt and worth. It was, it's something that being mindful of and aware of as you look at your behaviors was really important to us. And I thought it was really refreshing to hear this, after we'd been talking about marketing and about community and the kind of the nuts and bolts in some ways of what we do. Take a sort of sidestep and look at who we are instead of what we do. And what I really loved about his session was the opportunity to sit next to, I was sitting next to Richard at the time, Richard Bliss. And we had to do a lot of partner work during his session. And it was the opportunity to get to know Richard really well through his exercises. And that's not, even though at the Uprising, we all get to know each other pretty well. This took it to a kind of a deeper
Oh,
place.
that's
And I
interesting.
thought it was really, really, really rewarding.
Yeah, well, as we wrap up here, I just wanted to have you sort of build on that because we've gone through today just some of the big ideas, some of the best learnings from the uprising, because I just wanted to share that with my audience. But for as much time as we spend with these specific topics, we spend just as much time talking to these amazing thought leaders, these generous people, about issues in our lives, issues in our careers, specific problems, specific hurdles. So talk about the other side of the uprising. Is it this intense opportunity we have to have really meaningful, uninterrupted discussions with professionals who can help us?
Yeah, you walk in the door or into the patio area or wherever you first make your entry into the whole environment. And whether you know people or not, it's such an open and welcoming environment. And once people get over that kind of initial shyness or hey, this is who I am, you start to realize that okay, nobody here is lording it over anybody else. There's no, we said checking egos at the door, and that's 100% true. I think people were just like, oh, you're that person, or tell me more about yourself, or, you know, let's go have a glass of wine. There wasn't anything uncomfortable after a few minutes. And that carries through the entire time. And you really get to know everybody really well. Part of it is organized, is part of Mark's design, mm-hmm. where we have these breakout groups every afternoon after each of the sessions are over, or after the final session is over each day. We split off into three groups, and you get to know that group really well. And you're supposed to talk about, you know, what you've just heard, and we do, but the discussions then kind of turn more toward how it's really affecting you personally, or it goes into other directions, and you get to know people really well. I had Sandy in my group, and that's one of the reasons why I felt like I got to know her a little bit more. But what was amazing was that even, you know, Sandy or Ed or any of the people who came as these, I guess, what would normally be a keynote or a high level, like these kind of highlight speakers, were just part of the group.
Yeah.
And it just stayed that way.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is the way it is for a couple of days.
Yeah. And it carries over even at the meals.
Yeah. And the meals are, you know, you sit next to somebody different at every meal. That's all, you know, by design. And you just meet people. But I realize that, you know, there's just a lot to unpack. But I do want to say that I've been there three times now, and now I have friends. Like, I go back there. I go back to the uprising to get a big, dose of what's new, what I need to look for, and learn and absorb. Mm-hmm. But I also now go because it is my community.
Yeah,
it's an extension of different communities. It's an overlap of. But when it comes down to it, I go to the uprising, and I know that I'm with people who are just my people.
Yeah.
And that's the way it sort of started to feel even after the first one. And now I kind of look at where I'm at after 3 years. And if people say, why should I go to the uprising or what's in it? I mean, what is it about? It's not a conference. I guess it is a retreat. Mm. I think it's really a think tank of friends and a think tank of people who are just in it for each other. And I have had, like Mark, you mentioned earlier, you know, the personal brand course. You know, I did go through that. I've made some pivots and changes in my life in the last year or two. I owe, I think, a lot of it, if not all of it, to being at the uprisings, because it's a time for me to step away from, you know, from my day to day and just look at perspectives and take just a deeper look into what is happening that I can now get ahead of. And it's really been phenomenally effective for my own development. That's great. Really where it's at.
Well, as a teacher, that's really a great thing for me to hear. And yeah, I mean, the feedback was really, you know, profound and very energizing and even humbling in some ways. But yeah, and we had such you know, a diverse group there. I mean, from B2B and B2C and other countries and younger people and older people. But everybody came away with a very profound and important experience.
Yes.
A couple people called it transformational. So, Daniel, thank you so much for helping us.
And, anytime, Mark.
Yeah, and if you're listening and, you know, you're interested in joining the event, we only limit it to 30 people, so there's not a lot of slots. But, you know, there's another one coming up in October. We're going to set dates for, again, in April of 2025. Just drop me a note. Let me know if you want to know more. Daniel, thanks so much for helping. I couldn't have done it without you.
Oh, thanks, Mark. It's my pleasure.
All right. Take care, everyone.